Accession number 27350, Reel 3.
Raymond Rayner, Reel 3.
Yeah. Then, after that, we went to a play, the Wear, down in Exeter, where the rivers are the same. John Howard asked the general to find a place for us to train exactly where we was going to land. And he found these two bridges by the Wear in Exeter, which is exactly the same as the bridges we was going to land on, a quarter of a mile apart, and one run a canal and run a river, over the river. And we trained on there, down near Exeter. And we trained for 4 days, 4 nights. We let hell go loose down there. Of course, we was training in the day and night. And believe me, it was very hard training. In fact, it was that hard, we knew practically every blade of grass what was on that bridge.
What did you have to do with the training? What were you actually... you doing your proposed role?
No, we're doing all... I'm going to come to that. Now, training is that 1, 2, and 3 gliders land on one bridge. Well, I'll tell you that when I come to the where we go. Then 4, 5, and 6 land on another bridge. You understand? Now, we had to have another 2 platoons from another company to make 6 gliders up, because the company only has 4 platoons, as you may know. Well, we had to have 2 more platoons, so we had 2 companies, 2 platoons from B company, which done the training with us. Right. Now, we trained there, but and we nearly wrecked the place, actually. In fact, the police called John Howard out and told him he was wrecking the place, because he'd give us a night off with pay to go and let our air down, you understand? And John Howard, he had to go to the police station. He called John Howard, the police superintendent did, and told him what was happening, and he was going to lock us all up. Well, that had been the end of the invasion, wouldn't it? If he'd have locked us all up to train another platoon company like we was being trained. So the officer, he wore medals. He saw the officer had pre-war First War medals on, and the officer had sympathy with John Howard, because John Howard told him not to say nothing, but to tell him that we were doing a special training there. Didn't tell him what training. Obviously, you could imagine he may knew, because he's training on bridges. And so he didn't do no more, and sent out all his policemen to escort us back to our billets. He didn't lock us up at all. Well, I'll tell you now, we used grenades, real live grenades, on this exercise we done, not to injure anybody. We just threw them away from people, but one chap threw him in the roof and knocked all the tiles off of the roof, this house. And this person told John Howard about it, and he said, "We'd like to see Captain Pride in. He'd do all this work for you to get it repaired for you." And he did. But when Pridey was in action over in France, he had a letter come from this person saying the builders have not done his bridge, his tiles yet. Yeah.
When you were training against the bridges, were there any defenders of those?
Yes,
bridges?
Oh yes, I forgot to tell you that. We had the Polish paras to defend it, but John Howard insisted they were dressed in German uniforms, also with German weapons, so as we could get the atmosphere of being against an enemy. You understand?
You know, when you were training for taking the bridges, did you start say when you were going to start, did you start at the point roughly where your glider was supposed to land?
Yes, we started where there, but then we trained again to say number one glider never landed first, number two or three glider landed first, you do the same job as what number one. As I've told you before, we train to do any man's job. Even if all the sergeants were killed or the officers were killed, the junior private could take over and do the same job.
Which glider had you been allocated to at that point?
I was number four glider.
So where were you supposed to land? Were you doing the training?
I'll come to that in a moment. My glider was supposed to land on the River Orne Bridge, the first to land on the River Orne Bridge. Number one, two and three had to land on the river, on the Carn Canal Bridge. Okay? Four, five and six had to land on the River Orne Bridge.
So when you were doing that training, you were practising for taking the Orne Bridge,
That bridge. Actually, that bridge. No other bridge, that bridge alone. But we did train, if that bridge wasn't taken, you take that bridge. You understand? We trained to do a job where we could shuffle around and do any job which needed to be done, which I'll come to in a moment.
When you were training with the Poles, how were they as Germans?
I had on that actual operation, I had a wound by friendly fire. It wasn't a bullet. But I stalked a pole, got him down, but as he got there, as he fell down, his rifle fell against the cheeks of my half, and the rifle stuck in the cheeks of my half. And that's the honest truth. So they had to put a patch on that, and I carried on doing the operation. It only went in about an inch, but...
We didn't touch on it earlier as part of the other training, though, but you'd done unarmed combat, hadn't you?
We'd done unarmed combat all the time. We'd practised unarmed combat. We'd done everything which SAS troop would do.
Tell me about that, because you say you stalked the Polish para dressed as a German. How did you... approach him, stalk him, how would you try and get him on the ground? What technique would you use?
I got him by the neck and whipped him over, twisted his neck over, and he fell on the ground.
And was that one of the techniques you would learn for disabling?
Oh yeah, do anything. You'd do all sorts of things. If a rifle broke for you with a rifle, we could take it away from him.
How would you do that?
Just slip him aside and flip him over.
Who had instructed you in unarmed combat?
The physical training school. Army of Physical Training School told they to instruct us on that.
So when you were wounded, did you continue with the exercise?
Yeah, I did, yeah. But they put a patch on my arm.
At that stage, then, had you realised that the target was probably likely to be
we knew this is the last training we'd done on these bridges. That was the last hard training we'd done. We'd done lots of training other than that. All night training, as I told you. Nothing was done in the daylight. All night training.
Was this when... Am I right in thinking that John Howard instigated a day for night thing at one stage?
Sorry?
He instigated a day for night where everything was done at night rather than the daytime.
Yeah. That's what he'd done. He used to do everything at night. We used to train for it. Night training all the time.
Was that... taking it one step forward, was that a useful thing when you actually came to operate?
Yeah, well, it did, because you was immune from not getting tired. You know, if you would have done it on the night sort of thing, you would have probably been drowsy. But we got so used to working at night, it immuned us from being tired.
Okay, can you take me through step by step? The actual operation on D-Day? How you embarking and the flight?
You got my story there. Well, what happened, Number one, two, and three gliders. Number one landed in the right place, right by the Pegasus Bridge, as they call it now. That was the Benneville Bridge then. That landed on right where it was. David Wood's platoon came in second. He was in number two glider. He landed up the arse of number one glider. Woolworth thought he was going to hit him up the arse, sort of thing, you know. Number three come up just behind him. Now, number two, five and six glider. Number six glider landed on the bridge, on my bridge where I was supposed to land. I'm coming to my glider now. Number six landed on the bridge, on the River Orne Bridge. Actually took that. I'll tell you how they took them in a moment. Anyway, then number five glider come. There was number two, number four. Where were we? We had a navigation coming in over Gabor, and we were cast off in the wrong place. So we landed on a bridge which we actually took, but wasn't our objective. We was 8 miles away from our objective. Now, we crossed that bridge, actually took that bridge, but we had to split our platoon up, as you can imagine, to take the east side and the west side of the bridge, defend it. But that wasn't the end of the story. Captain Pryder was in second in command of the operation. He was in my glider, with Lieutenant Hooper was my platoon commander. And Pryder told Hooper to go and do a reconnaissance to find out exactly where we were. Of course, our job wasn't to hold that bridge at all. We had to finish with that bridge. He said, we've got to get back to Pegasus Bridge as fast as we possibly can. Now, Pryder went out. He got captured in a wood where he was trying to find out where we were. And the Germans brought him back to their headquarters just over the by this bridge. They were firing on us from there. And he actually, when we come in, they fired on us worse than what the other bridge had where we would have landed. There was tracer bullets nearly hitting us on the as we come in. There was tracer bullets coming down on the as we landed. And Pryder, anyway, he got captured, and the two Germans were bringing him back over the bridge. One was Smyger in his back, and the other one escorting him. Tony Hooper kept talking to him aloud, because he knew we were there. You understand? He talked to him very loudly, so he'd know where he was. Of course, it was pitch black, as you can remember, you can imagine. And he was talking, and so myself and Captain Pryder, we had to shout together because of the bombing and what was going around there was horrendous. The ground was shaking, and both of us shouted, "Jump, Tony!" He jumped in a ditch away from the German, left the German exposed on the road. As he jumped, he was 10 yards away from us. We couldn't let him get any further. As he jumped, we fired. He fell down dead, but as he fell down dead, he pulled his trigger, which he had had on Tony Hooper's back, and sprayed us. He hit me through the arm, went straight from here, come out here. And I was wounded. But before that, well, as I was told you, we landed in there, we had to have a lot of fire come down. When we crossed that bridge, the wireless operator was running the side of me with his wireless on. He was hit straight through the head. He fell down dead straight away. We knew he was dead. I was running aside, and I looked at him, and as far as you could look, you remember, it's pitch black. I tried his pulses. He was dead, all right. Anyway, we had to leave him there. We tried to get the wireless off of him. We couldn't. Anyway, he was the first man killed on D-Day. Now, they say Danny Brubridge was the first man killed, if you've heard the story, that he was the first man killed. That man, Everett, he was killed, the first man killed. Danny Brotheridge died 2 hours afterwards. You understand? But he actually fell down dead straight away. Because, anyway. Anyway, we said we've got to get back to Biggs's Bridge now. I was wounded. I never had my arm dressed for 6 hours after I was wounded, because we jumped over the edge to get back to Biggs's Bridge. There was about 13 of us out of the platoon. The others were on the other side of the bridge. We didn't wait for them to come back over. They couldn't get back over. So we jumped over. When we jumped over, we were stranded. The water, all the ground had been flooded, and the ground, and where you walked, you could walk in places, you were drowned in other places. So what they'd done, they took a toggle rope, my toggle rope off of me, wrapped it around my shoulders, and more or less held me up to go over, because I was the only one wounded other than the other man being killed. They, on the other side, there was three captured. Now, Amy Edges, he was shot afterwards. That's a bloke who was on the east side of the bridge. You understand what I mean? We was on the west side, he was on the... Sergeant Godbold was in... Sergeant... he was my best bloody mate. Barwick, he was in charge of that party. But they got... three of them got captured. Now, they took them prisoner, and about a mile and a half away, they took them to this place, and this is what the chappies who were taken prisoner told us afterwards. We didn't know this at the time, you understand. They was in this house, and they was to be interrogated by the Germans, and the Germans interrogated Everett. Not Everett. Bloody hell. Anyway, they was interrogating him, and he got a bit stroppy. He was a fattish. I'll show his photograph in a moment. He was a fattish bloke, you know, oldish bloke, one of the oldest on the operation. He got a bit strappy with the Germans, and all they could hear was a gunshot, bump. They killed him. And the people from that village buried him, not the army. The people from the village buried him, because they was about a mile and a half away from the bridge, and they made a beautiful graveyard. He's the only soldier in that cemetery today. Anyway, he was shot by the same. Anyway, we had the glider pilots with us, and we when you what glider pilots, you must look after them. If they're cotton wool, you mustn't let them go into action. So we took them with us. They came over with us, and we got them back, so they get back to England for other operations, you can understand. Anyway, we got back to Pegasus Bridge, okay? And
how long did it take you?
Well, just over the night, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Can I take you back a little bit? What was the actual, you know, what, when you embarked on board the glider, what were you carrying with you? What were equipment and weapons did you have with you?
You had about £60 on your back. You've got Bren gun magazines. You've got Sten gun magazines. Those who've got Sten guns. You've got grenades, phosphorus bombs, peanut bombs. All this weighs about £60.
And did you take anything extra with you for the operation that you wouldn't normally have carried, say, in training?
Well, yes. On our trousers, we had buttons, which we could take off, put together, and form a compass. And we had a silk map, which we wore around our neck, obviously, to keep it safe. Because that silk map was the... for the use of the compass if we go, because we were going to be the first to land, and we knew we were going to be in difficulty if we got captured or anything like that.
And what were you wearing? Were you wearing the Denison smock?
Denison smock, yeah. A steel helmet, yeah. But we always carried our beret with us. Do you know what we carried our beret with us? The Germans were frightened to death of the airborne division. They were frightened to death of us. Mind you, when I tell you about the Germans, they was only third-rate troops to what we were. We were elite troops, believe me. We were elite, no doubt about it. And they was only third-rate. The reason they was only third-rate, because they were conscripted Germans. There was 30 on the bridges, on the two bridges we had to take. There was 50 on there, sorry, there's 30. 50 on there. There was, all the NCOs were Germans. All the officers were Germans. Therefore, they had a language difficulty in understanding one another, really. Because there was Frenchmen, Polish, all sorts. You understand what I mean? There was conscripted soldiers to take all them bridges.
And what about your flight across? Have you got any memories of the actual flight in the glider across to France?
Across the norm, just more or less more like a training flight, really. You know, we knew we was going into action. Now, when we went to Torrent Rushton, I must tell you this. When we finished our training at the two bridges, we had got an inclination that we knew we was going to land on some bridges. As John Howard, when we got back to, we went straight to Torrent Rushton, where we was going to take off from. We was there for 6 days, approximately. Might have been five, might have been six. Time was no thing then, was it? Anyway, there we had all the information any soldier could be get from the French resistance and Madame Condré at the cafe. You've heard of the Madame Condré cafe? Well, she was used to work in the bank in Paris, where she used to get the information. She could speak German and all sorts of languages. She was a very clever woman. And her husband owned the Condré Café. He couldn't speak German, but she used to, when she used to treat the Germans as if they were friends, you understand, to get information from them. And she was hated by the village of Benneville because they thought she was a German
collaborator.
Yeah. And she thought he was helping the Germans, but she wasn't. She was helping us. She was getting information from the Germans, what was happening there, where all the guns were on the bridges, where the explosives were, and she used to tell it to her husband, who used to go down to the maternity hospital, where Madame Voyon, who was the matron of the hospital. Now, she was more or less the lady of the village. You understand what I mean? Like the Vioners are the ladies of Aylesbury. You understand what I mean? She was the lady of the village, and she was a French resistance leader. She used to pass her husband to her from her husband, who used to pass it to Madame Voyon, who used to have access to go to Caen whenever she needed to get in, to get stuff for a maternity hospital. And she used to take it to the French resistance in Caen to send it back over to England, for them to send it from England to the Mad Elves, what we called the Mad Elves, that was on Salisbury Plain. It was an old cottage where the division headquarters were. They used to send the messages to there. She used to send, the French people used to send the messages back over to England. There they used to send it back to John Howard at Torrent Rushton, where we had all the information what was happening on the bridges. We knew everything about that operation before we took off.
So when you took off, you say the flight was like a training flight.
Yeah, it was just like a training.
Did you see anything on
the
flight?
Well, the first thing we noticed when we looked out the windows and all the rap girls, they knew it was going on something big, because they was all out of handkerchiefs, they were crying to us as we went past, and the blokes were saluting us, the rap boys. You know, they knew we were going on a big operation.
And what about that flight? Could you see anything? Was there any singing or anything?
Not
like
really.
That?
No. Now, when you're flying in a glider, it's a very dangerous thing. Believe me, you've got Bangalore torpedoes in there to blow up the barbed wire if there is any. You've got grenades in there. You've got bombs in there. You've got mortar bombs in there. All stacked. We used to have bucket pools of grenades. Buckets of them. And all this sort of thing. Now, that's a very dangerous... very dangerous things in a wooden bloody aircraft, let's put it that way. Well, in ordinary aircraft, they are. The shrapnel hits it. But we knew we was going over an area which was not a lot of shrapnel about, not anti-aircraft, what's the name, but we did get it, as I told you, when we landed by machine guns with tracer bullets. We got it as we come in, but other than that, we didn't get any shrapnel on the gliders.
When was the mistake realised that your glider had landed in the wrong place? Was it after you'd actually captured the bridge?
When we captured the bridge, as soon as we landed, we knew we was on the wrong bridge. Which I told you, we knew every blade of grass which was on them other bridges. We knew we was on the wrong bridge. So we had to send out Lieutenant Hooper to go and find out where we were.
And on your march to Pegasus Bridge, how was your arm?
Oh, I never had it dressed till I got to a place called Robberholm, where the Canadian 3rd Battalion has landed to go and blow up. There's two operations after us. Now, the two operations were the Mervyn Battery. That had to be silenced. That had to be silenced by a battalion of Colonel Hottaway. He was in command of the battalion. But as I've told people before, Paris could not have taken those bridges. Of course, it was a Cordemain operation. And a Cordemain's operation means a strict, swift attack. You understand? But if the Paris had tried to take it, by the time they consolidated, found out where they were, got to the bridges, the bloody bridges had been blown up. Wasn't that? Anyway, Ottaway, his job was to take the Mervyn Battery. Now, his blokes were drowned in that flood water. A lot of his chaps were drowned. Ottaway, he went in that, took that, I'll give him credit there, because he took that Mervyn Battery with 160 men, and he lost a lot of them as well when they went in.
We interviewed him.
You did? Has he told you the same story?
Tells the story about the battery, yes.
Yeah, and that's it. Anyway, from there, the Canadians landed a place called Robholm. They were supposed to make their way to the River Dease bridges to blow all them bridges up on the River Dease. But there again, they were struck by this water. A lot of them, lots of their men there. The same as the 7th Battalion Paris under Kurt Pinecoffin. You've spoke to him yet? His battalion was the same. They all went into this water, all landed in this water, and a lot of them were drowned. We see a lot of them drown, as we
as you were making your way to the bridge, yeah.
And